And so the restrictive covenants were traditionally between private parties. And so initially in 1926, at the same time the Supreme Court, the same year that the Supreme Court decided the Village of Euclid case, the Supreme Court held that private racial restrictive covenants were enforceable because the government was not involved, was the theory at the time. And they were private agreements between individuals, and they could do that. And from history, we've learned that the government was actually encouraging the use of the restrictive covenants. That is part of some of the issues that were with lending at the time. And let's fast forward about 20 years to Shelley versus Kramer, when the Supreme Court finally realized that when you use a state court to enforce restrictive covenants, you are violating the Constitution. And in that case, the private party sued to enforce a restrictive covenant that limited who could own the property based on race. And the court finally recognized that when you have to ask a court, they are an element of the state. It is state action that is being used to make that agreement stick. So that's obviously, as we know, is a huge issue. And I'm going to turn it over now to Nefertiti to talk about Austin.
Thanks, Trish. And just to add to what Trish has started sharing, a lot of this information is, you know, a lot of academics have been discussing this more recently, and good references include The Color of Law, Richard Rothstein, and then also Know Your Value more recently by Andre Perry. And then I'm going to focus really on what took place in Austin as it relates to some of what I call a fight for black and brown people, specifically African Americans in Austin, to occupy space, and how all of this sort of provides a background context to where we are today. And sometimes we want to look at historical, we think these actions happened so far ago, so long ago, that there are no ramifications today. But there are, in fact, ramifications which we see, which we can see in the health disparities, we can see in the income disparities, and specifically in Austin, the decreasing population and displacement of African American people in Austin. So one of the things that we seek to do, and when I say we, those of us who are working in the displacement prevention office, is really, number one, understand and discuss Austin's history of racial segregation. Sometimes I feel like, okay, do we talk about this too much? But community members really demand that we recognize and acknowledge this because it is impacting where they live today and their outcomes. And so what we seek to do is be honest and transparent when we're discussing some of the historical actions taken by the city in planning and in housing investments. And we feel that this is one of the only ways that we can begin to address some of the housing practices and policies of the past. And so that's to be very transparent in terms of what has happened. And just, I don't want to assume everyone knows what this is, but this was East Avenue, which is today I-35, Interstate 35, which, as you know, in many cities, highways were those dividing lines or dividing structures, which basically tore neighborhoods or communities apart. So it was the dividing line in Austin when the freeway was constructed. And before the 1928 plan, which I'll get to next, there existed a number of freedmen's communities throughout the city of Austin. And basically, these were communities where formerly enslaved Africans located after the emancipation from slavery. And so they were located and they gathered in different places throughout Austin. So not only in East Austin and West Austin and many other areas that people started to reside and get land so that they could be self-determined, build their businesses, homes, and then also where they live to work for their employers. There is the picture of the church that you see there is Sweet Home Baptist Church that still exists in Clarksville, which is part of West Austin. It's one of the only remaining structures of, and I believe there's two families that still live in this community in Clarksville, two African-American families. The rest of them have all been displaced. Last year, Sweet Home Baptist Church celebrated their 150th anniversary. But it was really the 1928 master plan that was touted as a very progressive plan to address some of the city's major challenges around the increased transportation that they were seeing, how they were going to locate parks, and then even how they were going to center the University of Texas at Austin as the educational and cultural hub of not only the city, but the state. So these were many of the things that were discussed in the plan. But in addition to that, it was also the Negro problem that they outlined, and they wanted to find a solution to make sure that the races remained segregated.